is a movement gaining momentum in our country which hopes to transform the world. Although its members are from diverse backgrounds, they are drawn together by common beliefs and objectives. They see mankind at the threshold of a new era, at the beginning of a new consciousness, which will usher in a time of peace, harmony, and unprecedented progress. I'm Dan Wheeler, and I invite you to join me as I look into the New Age. The Bay City, beautiful San Francisco, California. This city has been the springboard for many movements across America, such as the hippies and the flower children of the 60s and the peace movement of the 70s. And now in the 80s, the movement that seems to be gaining momentum all across America is going strong in San Francisco. The Civic Auditorium here was one site of the 1983 Mind Body Spirit Festival, sponsored by the Unity and Diversity Council, a New Age organization. Organizers, exhibitors, and fairgoers alike gave us their perspectives on this rapidly growing movement. Why are you at the Mind Body Spirit Festival today?
Well, I think there's a few key things which most of these groups are saying, and that's mainly to get in touch with yourself, that there's a higher self, and that there's a certain pathway to getting there. Some people are into meditation, other people are into yoga, some people find chiropractic important, other people find homeopathy important, and it's just really interesting to see how they're all interconnected.
Why are you at the Mind, Body, Spirit Festival this evening?
Well, I work with mind, body, and spirit in my work, so I like to contribute and share with other people who are interested in that kind of thing.
In what ways do you work with the mind, body, and spirit?
I do healing work, and I have a children's program up in Mount Shasta, where it's a holistic program, so it's mind, body, spirit. Work with music and dance and relaxation and healing, things like that.
Why is a festival like this important?
Because we need to have direction, you know. The ways we've been, the old ways longer fit with today's, what people want today. We can't do it the old way. We need new ways.
It's the most exciting time, I think, in the whole history of mankind, when we can either destroy ourselves or move into a new and wonderful golden age.
Peter Caddy is co-founder of Findhorn, which is a community located in Scotland. Findhorn has astounded the world by turning its cold, soil-poor North Sea Peninsula location into an Aquarian Garden of Eden. The New Age community credits its spectacular success to communication and cooperation with nature spirits. Now, Mr. Caddy, you talk about a New Age, and we heard those terms a lot. What does the New Age mean to you?
Well, we're moving from the Piscean Age that's been going for about the last 2,000 years into the Aquarian Age, which some say is a New Age. Each 2,000 years there's a New Age. And so different energies are coming in, and the old forms are breaking up to make way for the new.
What is going on? What's the New Age?
The New Age to me is a sort of a synthesis of technical and spiritual values that are kind of meshed together to enhance our experience of life.
The festival, sponsored by the Unity and Diversity Council, certainly demonstrated great diversity. The 140 exhibitors ranged from the highly scientific to the extremely mystical. Festival goers by the thousands were offered technical, psychological, and spiritual remedies for the problems facing mankind today.
I think it's amazing how consciousness is really taking off, and how it's just accelerating across the world now, this new phenomenon of consciousness, the new age. Marilyn Ferguson's book, The Aquarian Conspiracy, all touches on this, and various people in different ways are talking about new age things, but not actually calling it the new age. And it really seems to be taking off.
Why are there so many English people at a festival like this?
I don't know. I've seen quite a few. It's probably because us English used to be pagans and witches anyway. We started it all off, didn't we?
By far the most prevalent technique used in attempting to achieve the objectives of the New Age is meditation. Sister Brahma Kumari Jayanti was one of the featured lecturers at this festival. She is the director of the London Raja Yoga Center, and she lectured on spiritual and meditative methods for bringing about world change in the New Age. What takes place during meditation?
It's a very beautiful experience, that's for sure. But we go through different levels of experience. For instance, the stage that everybody begins with, a stage where the energy of the mind is scattering in 1,000 different directions. That's normal. That's the way usually our mind works. But then in meditation, the intention is to channel that energy, to control the energy of the mind and focus it in one direction, towards the Supreme. You're seeing things on the scale of eternity. Another term for this would be to be looking at things with your third eye, because this is the location of the third eye, the awareness, the wisdom. The third eye is the eye of knowledge, the eye of the divine intellect. And so this is the first step of awakening of the consciousness, this awareness of I, the soul.
Various kinds of meditation were demonstrated at this festival. Some meditated in a group, such as these people at the Bay Area Transmission Network booth. Bill, what is the main function of the Bay Area Transmission Network?
The main function of the network is really twofold. One, the practice of and the dissemination of the use of a new form of group meditation called transmission work, which is essentially a form of meditation that is a service. It's not meditation for one's personal spiritual development, but rather for spreading spiritual energies out to the planet wherever they are needed. So the group sort of acts as a channel, stepping down energies that are sent to the group from the spiritual hierarchy and from the Christ, and then sort of lowering the voltage of those energies and then making them available to all of humanity. Now, the second function is to spread the word of the reappearance of that being who's known as the Christ in the West and known as the Bodhisattva or Maitreya Buddha or the Emanmadi in the East, the world teacher.
Dave Hunt is the author of Peace, Prosperity, and the Coming Holocaust, The New Age and Prophecy. His book documents the New Age movement from a biblical perspective. He was at the festival, and he gave us his views on what was going on.
The New Age seems to me to be rather a misleading euphemism because it's very old. Most of what you see is acupuncture, yoga, tai chi, whatever it is. Most of it comes from the Orient also, which is rather interesting. So it seems to me to be more old occultism rather than New Age.
So you see a real spiritual influence in this festival?
Definitely, because what the you know, I've talked with a number of the people in the booths around here, and it's not rational, for one thing. As I ask questions, you've got various yoga institutes, you've got self-hypnosis, you've got scientific organizations that seem to be very diverse, and yet they are all working together for a common goal, that is a new world government and a new world religion. They seem to be taking different roads, yet they're really all going to the same place. And the common denominator, there are several common denominators. Number one, it involves a force, not a personal God. Number two, it seems to all be centered in self. In other words, inner awareness, looking within ourselves, getting in touch with your higher self or your true self, not the personal God. It involves consciousness, different levels of consciousness. You're not to think of it rationally. For instance, I've asked people well, if I'm getting in touch with myself, why am I not in touch with myself if it's really me, you know? Even if it's called a higher self.
I guess it's an experiential thing that people get put in touch with, and when you are in touch with that higher self, you often, life just falls into place and things work out really well, and you feel supported by just the universe.
Where does the higher self come from? Is it within each and every one of us?
I believe all of us have a higher self, and some people are in touch with that higher self and others aren't in touch with that higher self.
Or why do I have to have somebody else's help or go into some particular state of consciousness to get in touch with what I'm really supposed to be already? And if this essence of all of us is all-knowing and all-good, why do we have so many problems in this world? And when I get to this point, I find people saying, well, now, you're trying to be rational. You shouldn't be rational. You have to experience this. I say, for instance, to the Mahikari people who want me to experience a force. It involves a force, getting in line with the chakras and with some universal force. And I say, how can I... I don't want to buy a package at a store if I don't know what's inside the package, you know. So do you have something that will explain this a little better? And they say, well, no, you shouldn't. You can't be rational about it. You have to experience it first. And I say, well, that could be like jumping over a cliff, you know. You tell me just to jump and experience it first, but that could be the end. And you know, the Bible says there's a way that seems right unto a man, but the end thereof are the ways of death.
What do you think about this festival?
My wife likes it.
How come you don't? Or do you?
Well, I don't buy half the things they preach here. It's just not my religion.
What are they preaching here?
You can't touch my ankle and get my head well, as far as I'm concerned.
So in other words, you think that they're trying to combine the spiritual in with the physical things they're doing too much?
I think they're making it up as they go along.
Uh-huh. Doesn't seem to be a rhyme or reason to it.
A book.
Ma'am, and how about you? What do you think about this festival?
Well, my whole heart and soul and mind is in it, and I believe in all of it, and I have for many years. And contrary to what my husband has just said, when we are alone and after it sinks in, he comes out with things that he has absorbed.
I really love these people, and it really saddens me because I think they're lost, you know. I think they think they found something that is all within themselves. What they need is help, not from some force, because a force is irrational. They need to know the God, the true God, the creator of the universe, who came as a man to die for our sins, Jesus Christ, who paid a debt we could never pay. And in my opinion, that's the only hope, not getting in touch with a force.
Coming up before.
Cheryl, you call yourself a clairvoyant. What is a clairvoyant?
I think it's always a person that has inner sixth sense, really, and just feels things without being able to really just... anybody can look at cards and everything and read them, but you must have a feeling that goes with them, and therefore you get this inner sense, and the feelings from hand and the crystal is quite incredible.
Is this a spiritual power?
Yes, I think so.
We saw this brochure advertising a new kind of night on the town in Los Angeles. It's called Transformation on Wheels with Julie. Now, the brochure says these tours are for the adventuresome and the open-minded. They're sponsored by the Unity and Diversity Council and organized by Julie Parker. Tonight, we're going to take this tour to learn more about the beginnings of the New Age movement. Our first destination is a Zen Buddhist temple. Tour organizer Julie Parker uses the travel time to give the participants an introduction to Zen Buddhism.
Zen is designed to help us overcome all of these feelings that we can't cope, that we can't stand in, that life is too much for us, that we've got to constantly be changing our environment to suit us. And if we really wanted to try some Zen practice, we would just put ourselves on a bus with the most unbearable conditions and practice endurance. because Zen is harsh, Zen is severe, it is a path that doesn't appeal to very many people, but it is a path that promises tremendous strength, tremendous breakthroughs into what is real in life.
Arriving at the temple, the group is escorted into a Zen meditating room for a lecture from a Zen master.
Zen, of course, is a Buddhist practice. But unlike some forms of Buddhist practice, it's based very strongly on Zazen, or meditative discipline.
Teacher addresses the whole assembly of people. But in our practice, we feel that each person needs a particular medicine at a particular time. And what I'd like to do is show you the interview room. It's just through here. And if you can follow me and then just quietly come in, take a look, and then pass on so the next people can get in. The master sits here, and the student comes in, and face to face, directly, they have their interchange. It's a very special place.
After spending about 40 minutes with the Zen Buddhists, the tour travels across Los Angeles to the Taoist Institute. The two main instructors, Director Carl Totten and Bruce Eichelberger, are both master hypnotists as well. Once the group arrives, they begin their presentation by leading an energy flow exercise.
Extend your breathing down into your abdomen, real beneficial for the organs and for the energy flow, etc. In addition, when you're doing the exercises, I'd like you to take your tongue, we'll pretend this is a tongue, and curl it upward so that the tip of your tongue is resting against the roof of your mouth. I'd also like you to have your shoulders real relaxed. If you know your musculature, use your deltoid muscles, not your trapezius muscles. About three-fourths of the way across, lift up your left hand. You're going to reach a position where your right hand is pointing at your left bicep. And then you come across together. Some of you are more visual than others in picking themselves. Some of you need to experience it. And basically, they're designed to cultivate the ability to channel energy through the hands. Those of you who are having a specific sensation in your hands are having the sensation of energy moving through your hands. Because these exercises are very powerful in projecting that energy in that way. This is also exercises that are taught to martial arts students. As you can imagine, it's real useful to be able to put energy in your hands when you're doing martial arts. Okay. But also, the energy that's cultivated in the hands can be used for healing. My teacher emphasized using this energy in doing like aura balancing and in becoming aware of an additional sensitivity in the body.
Director Carl Totten gives a concluding definition of Tao.
There's an old saying, there's room for all things within Tao. Yoga, of course, is part of the Tao. Everything that exists in the world obviously is here for a purpose. It's like a complementary relationship between all elements within the universe. Yoga certainly is a very important part of that. The word yoga means union.
Mm-hmm.
Again, that balance, that connection.
After spending an hour at the Taoist Institute, the tour bus heads back to the original meeting place in front of the Unity and Diversity headquarters. On the ride back, I spoke with the tour participants about transformation, the new age, and their reactions to the tour.
Did you enjoy the tour tonight?
Yeah, I did. Yeah.
Why are you interested in this transformational movement?
Well, I have a problem with stress, and I feel that maybe we're not meant to put up with some of those things. So this is kind of an introduction to me. You know, I'd like to try to see if that would help me tolerate.
Are you seeing society moving into a new age?
Yes. People don't want to put up with all that tension and
They want to take life as easy as possible and still, you know, be ambitious.
Why are you interested in this transformational movement of society?
You don't have to hold it off.
I grew up in Nazi Germany with Nazi parents, and we were completely programmed. And I was a very neurotic, very sick person when I came out of this. And I learned over the years very slowly to discover myself and learn to follow my own inner voice. And I learned it mostly out here in California, where this whole movement going on.
Is this movement really taking off in society?
I think it does. I mean, especially out here in California, but it spreads. And I was back in Germany to several visits, and there's also already a lot of stuff going on.
Are you actively involved in the movement?
Yeah, I am. I was for 25 years an artist, but now I'm a healer. I give counseling sessions. Since I went through this, a tremendous transformation from a Nazi child where I'm today, I teach people this inner transformation.
Do you have healing powers within you? Is that how you heal?
Yeah, yeah.
Where do they come from?
I can tell. I took once a massage class, and my teacher told me I have this. And I started working on people, and I discovered it is really true. I have no idea where it comes from. It comes from a higher source. But I feel it. I feel this energy going through me.
You know what that higher source is?
You can talk it, call it God or the universal soul or whatever. Learn to be able to tap into it. And
how does one learn to tap it?
Now, when you, what they talk today in the Zen Center, is stilling yourself and knowing. We're kind of connecting to your higher self. I actually teach people how to do that, but I can't do that in a short.
Sir, why are you interested in the transformational movement?
Well, I started with yoga about 5 or 6 years ago, and I realized how much it helped my golf game, because I've always been interested in golf, played golf well. You know, it helps all the muscles, and you're able to make a good turn in golf. That's the most important thing.
We hear a lot about new age that we might be moving into through this transformation. Do you think it's happening?
Oh, I think so. I think people are getting close together all over the world, and I think that's what this is all about.
What did you think of the tour tonight?
Well, it was very interesting. I'm really interested in Tai Chi.
Is that right?
Yes, because I'm going to get that chart, and I'm going to learn Tai Chi, because we're going to China in July. And everybody's doing Tai Chi Chuan, so I think I'm going to learn it.
The New Age movement attempts to pull together all the religions of the world into one belief system. That belief centers around self-realization, or finding the God within. The movement has been successful in gaining the support of many religious cults. Mary Kay Lentz is a follower of the Indian guru, Bhagwan Sri Rajneesh. In what ways is Bhagwan Rajneesh part of the New Age movement?
Well, one of his basic messages is that we are all Buddhists, and that we just don't realize it. And his purpose, he feels, is just to make us wake up to the fact that we're all gods and goddesses. And, you know, that's what the New Age really is about, is people awakening to their own divinity.
Do you think we are?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I think I am, too, but I just haven't realized it yet, unfortunately.
Mary, what does the New Age movement mean to you?
The New Age movement to me means an awakening in the hearts of people and in the minds of people. And it means a quickening in consciousness. Somehow people, I guess I believe that we're all evolving, not just physically but spiritually, and that the New Age is kind of a quickening of that whole evolution to bring paradise onto earth, or Shambhala, or whatever you want to call it, heaven onto earth.
My name is Ravi Maharaj. Ravi is spelled R-A-V-I, and it's short for an Indian name, Rabindranath. Maharaj is my last name, but it really used to be a title. Today I use it as a last name. And it means great king. I have such a name because of the caste I was born into. And that caste is called the Brahmin caste. In Hinduism, the religion into which I was born, the caste system is very central. And my father was a Hindu priest, a guru, a yogi. You know, some years ago, we would hardly have heard these terms, guru and yogi and so on. But Today, virtually everybody knows them. Guru means divine master or teacher. And the guru in Hinduism is worshipped as God. The Hindu believes that his guru is divine. But when he died, his mantle fell on me, and I very willingly began to follow in his footsteps. I was already a very religious child, even at the age of 7, which is roughly how old I was when he died. And in fact, I had always been a vegetarian, like my father was, not eating meat or fish or eggs. And I started practicing yoga and meditation even before the age of 5. And through my yoga and meditation practices, very often I used to experience a trance, journeys into other worlds where I would see mystical things, quote, the gods, and bright lights and bright colors, psychedelic movements. And it was fantastic, or so it seemed. And I was very proud of these many experiences I was having, because for the Hindu, the more you experience spiritually, the more divine you think you are. For the Hindu, the experiential is of utmost importance. Now, Hindus also bowed at my feet, like they did to my father, and worshipped me and gave me their gifts and their offerings. But you know, in spite of all of that, in spite of all the religiosity and so-called spiritual experiences, in spite of the fact that my world eventually became a world of mysticism, deep in my own heart I was empty, I was unhappy, I was dissatisfied. I lived in a home with 13 or 14 other people, but I was lonely in my own heart. And I came to realize that something was missing, something was wrong. Just something was not right. And I began to search for the truth, for the real truth, earnestly and sincerely, with my whole heart. I searched within Hinduism. I searched in the Hindu scriptures. I searched in my own Hindu mystical experiences, but still I was empty. I, in spite of the fact that I had to believe as a religious Brahmin Hindu that I was divine, that I was perfect, yet I knew that I was just a sinner like everybody else. I knew my own imperfection. I knew my own limitation. I knew that I was not God. And I wanted to find forgiveness for my sins. Also, having believed very sincerely in reincarnation, that when I died, I would come back again. Yet, that did not hold out any real hope to me. Just to die and come back, and to die and come back again and again, doesn't hold out any hope. I wanted to find a real hope, a hope beyond the grave. And I wanted to find a real hope, in the sense that having found it, I would somehow know where I'm really going. We're going and going and going, but where are we really going? I had important questions in my own heart. Who am I? Why am I alive? What am I really doing here on this planet? But also, where am I going? I wanted to know. And in my most desperate hour, having locked myself away in a room for about 4 days and nights without eating, drinking, anything, without talking to anyone, an Indian lady came to our home and shared with me the message of the gospel of Jesus Christ. And she said, "Rabbi, God loves you. And Jesus Christ died on a cross to forgive all your sins. And God wants to come into your life, but he would only come through Christ, who said, 'I am the way, the truth, and the life. No man comes unto the Father but by me.'" Well, I argued a lot with her. I told her I would never, ever become a Christian, not even on my deathbed. But she was very kind and very cool and very loving and friendly and understanding. And she tolerated me. But the words she shared with me really spoke to my heart. They convicted me. God showed me that Christ is the way. That the way to God is through God, namely Jesus Christ himself. And after much inner battles and turmoils and conflicts, after about 3 weeks or so, I finally went on my knees and prayed a very simple prayer because I really wanted to know the true and living God. I really wanted to find the truth. I really wanted the answer. And I prayed a simple prayer asking Christ to come into my life, to forgive all my sins, to help me to find the true and living God. I prayed that prayer sincerely. And the tears began to flow down my cheeks. Because when I prayed that prayer, something really happened in my life. It is only then that I realized that all the many, many mystical experiences I was having, psychedelic experiences without drugs, all the visions that I had of seeing the gods and so on, were all part and parcel of the darkness that was in me. God set me free from all of that. And Christ, who said, I am the light of the world, entered my life and made me a brand new person. God gave me a much more fantastic hope, a hope to be with him in his kingdom forever and ever. And I found the answer through Jesus Christ. Today I know who I am, I know why I am alive, I know where I came from, and I know where I am going.
Eric Pament is an editor for Cornerstone magazine, and he has researched the New Age movement for a number of years. He capsulizes their views for us.
The concept of personal transformation is key to what the New Age movement is all about. The idea is that man has within himself the powers or the abilities or the qualities which will enable him to achieve all that he ever desires and all that he ever needs. Basically, people in New Age philosophy think that man is a divine being who is hampered and harnessed by misinterpretations and poor concepts. They believe that man's problems can be solved by freeing his thinking, by freeing the processes of thought within himself, and by tapping into a divine potential which exists within all of us. Sometimes it's called a life force, sometimes it's literally called the Force, as it was in Star Wars. Sometimes it's called Ki, as in the Chinese term, Japanese term. Sometimes it's believed to be prana, a Hindu term for a divine essence that permeates all of us. So whatever the term is used, if there is a divine force which we can all tap to solve all of our problems or to basically realign misaligned energies within our bodies. One of the preeminent premises of New Age philosophy of people that are looking for a New Age is that we all need to transform our minds and transform our thinking. Our consciousness needs to be changed. Our purposes and values need to be altered. Nobody has the final truth. Nobody knows all the answers. Nobody has it all down pat. And so the New Age philosophy depends on this constant synthesis.
Dave Hunt, author and researcher, is a recognized authority on Eastern mysticism, the New Age movement, and biblical Christianity. He comments on the background of the universal consciousness concept.
You see, there again it ties in with Hinduism because the whole New Age movement comes right out of Hindu-Buddhist occultism. And in Hinduism, the main goal of yoga, for instance, is called self-realization. Now, Abraham Maslow's self-actualization is just the yogi's self-realization dressed up in Western terminology. And the goal of yoga is to realize that I'm God, to realize that Atman, the individual soul, is identical with Brahman, the universal soul. So when they're talking about getting in touch with a higher self, what most of them mean, that would be the initiates who are really into this, what they mean is I'm getting in touch with God, but it's not the personal God of the Bible, but it's sort of the Star Wars force with the dark and the light side, or it's this whole universe, you know, of which we're all part of. It's this universal consciousness. That's what I'm tuning into.
Although some would claim that the New Age movement is too diversified to have an organized leadership, there are certain individuals whose influence is universally respected among New Agers. Dr. Willis Harmon commands such respect. He is a consultant to top management of this country's most powerful corporations, a social scientist at SRI International, a professor at Stanford University, and president of the Institute of Noetic Sciences.
But then there are states of mind that you can get into where the perception, like Edgar Mitchell, feeling the oneness with the earth and all its inhabitants, in that kind of state of consciousness, there's much more awareness of a deeper level of the mind where we're all connected. And that deeper level of the mind you could call universal consciousness or infinite mind or God or whatever you want. It's awe-inspiring, there's no question about it. One can see why these experiences get described in religious terms.
Marilyn Ferguson, in a recent book entitled The Aquarian Conspiracy, talks about a paradigm shift or a massive social transformation. Can this really happen?
It's a kind of gradual waking up, changing awareness, changing perceptions, and along with that is a total change in the beliefs about the potentialities of human beings and the potentialities of human society. And you can watch this thing spread, and as I looked, it spread, it seems to me, from really a handful 20 years ago to tens of millions of people in this country alone. Now, and it's also present in Europe and to some extent other places. There are not adequate statistics on this. At SRI, we have tried to gather some survey data that relates to this, and it looks as though something between 10 and 20% of the U.S. adult population has made such a shift in the last 20 years. That's a big group of people. And so something is happening, and it's happening very rapidly, and this change in awareness, change in consciousness, change in beliefs, is taking place, but it's quite spontaneous. It's not something that somebody's manipulating into being. And it shows up in a lot of different ways, in the women's movement, in the peace movement, in the ecological movements, and so on. From one standpoint, it doesn't look like one thing. It looks like a diversity of things, but all of them connect together.
I consider myself to be in touch with a sense of my power, yes.
David Spengler is an author of numerous New Age books, including Revelation, The Birth of a New Age. He was formerly co-director of the Findhorn community in northern Scotland. We found him this summer on the High Winds Farm just outside of Sheboygan, Wisconsin, where he was leading New Age seminars.
Marilyn Ferguson and Dr. Willis Harmon and many others have said that this movement is growing with amazing speed. Do you see this happening?
Yes, I do, very much so. I've been involved now for 20 years. And the differences between when I started in 64, actually lecturing in 64, and now it's like night and day. The changes have been so vast in terms of people becoming aware and committed and open to these ideas of new values and transformations. So, yes, I see it happening very quickly.
What do you call this movement?
I use the phrase the New Age movement, or the movement for an emerging culture.
How is it happening? How is it organized?
Well, that's the beautiful thing about it. It's not really organized. There's no leader. There's no one group. There's no overarching structure. It's happening really out of people's lives, out of people who have a vision that the world isn't working for them or for each other the way it could.
The New Age movement actually involves loose networks of thousands of groups that are into a number of different things. There's a lot of diversity, but they also are unified to the extent that they basically accept Hindu belief system that all is one and all is God. And they are anti-Christian, for sure. As I've traveled around the world and I've interviewed hundreds and hundreds of people, I find something very interesting. It's a common philosophy behind this whole thing. And I don't care whether it's a medium in a seance or whether you're getting out of a Ouija board or through alleged space brothers, supposedly from a UFO or whatever. The same lies that Satan introduced to Eve in the Garden of Eden come through every time, that God is not personally, he's a force, that there is no death, reincarnation, spirit survival, spirit communication, that we can become gods, and that it's in the tree of knowledge. There's nothing wrong with you. It's the way you think. You need to expand your awareness and realize that these powers are in the mind. And that comes through everywhere. And I've talked to people who've never talked to one another, and yet they all have gotten the same message. Well, obviously, there's a common mastermind behind this. And when this mastermind is presenting the very lies that the Bible says Satan introduced to Eve in the Garden of Eden, I don't think you have to be a great genius to identify who is behind this.
Rudyard Kipling once wrote, "East is east and west is west, and never the twain shall meet." He obviously was not a New Age thinker. For, as our experts have indicated, the West is being transformed. Orthodox Judeo-Christian concepts of God and man are being replaced, and at a dizzying rate. The most obvious New Age influence is in the health and medical fields. The term used to describe this growing phenomenon is holistic health. Ann Langford is Dean of the Department of Holistic Health at John F. Kennedy University in California.
Dr. Langford, what is holistic health?
Holistic health is a way of being that includes the mind, body, and spirit of man. And it's by holism, it means the interaction between all of them, the mind, body, and spirit. And it includes the person's feelings, their spiritual attitudes, their emotions, and whatever else is included in that person and their relationship to their environment. So it's well known, even in the medical field, that there's a real correlation between the mind and the body. And what we're doing is bringing in holistic health, is bringing in the spirit, too.
Robert Thibodeau is the owner of one of the largest esoteric bookstores in the Midwest. He comments on the interest in holistic health.
We have books on all kinds of healing, whether it's psychic or mind power, or whether it's ginger compresses to get rid of cysts, or any kind of healing form we can. A lot of doctors, in fact, we just sold a ton of books yesterday to a whole medical clinic out in the suburbs that's real expensive. And they've got all the what science has, they have.
Hmm.
They want more. There aren't enough answers. Science alone does not have all the answers. The man who has all the answers probably doesn't have a heart. So we're in an interesting time where mysticism and science are trying to blend.
Paul and Terry Reiser have recently co-authored a book with John Weldon on the holistic health movement. Paul is an MD in family practice.
One of the concerns we have is that what are basically religious, spiritual, mystical concepts are being promoted under the guise of some sort of neutral middle ground. For example, giving credits for Touch for Health, for continuing medical education or nursing education. Another area where this is happening is in efforts to, in a sense, change the definition of medical care. Right now, the Board of Medical Quality Assurance in California is considering, what are we going to call medicine? If you just call yourself a healer, is that good enough? And should we deregulate this definition of a health care person as someone that's had a certain number of hours? Basically, what we may be seeing is religion being promoted under some other guise as some kind of neutral care for the public at large.
Some holistic health practitioners believe this life force can communicate with a person and actually diagnose their disease for them. So the goal is to establish a dialogue between the patient and the force. Ann Langford uses this concept in her healing workshop.
It's a workshop that I give that involves getting people in touch with the creative unconscious through writing, through drawing, through imagery, through visualization. And when you can get in touch with the creative unconscious, we can really look at the issue of disease and get images for your or whoever, you know, disease it is, and also get in touch with the life force. And when a person can dialogue between their disease and their life force, they can get some real communication going and a sense of what they need towards healing. What's their next step? So the workshop that I do that I call Healing Stories has to do with working with the unconscious.
Though holistic health involves some physical therapies, the heart of the movement centers on mind-spirit techniques such as transcendental meditation. Bob and Kathy Story were instructors in TM for over a decade. Bob, what exactly is transcendental meditation?
Well, what it is, Dan, is a technique to relax oneself. It's a technique for deep relaxation.
What is the goal of this technique?
the goal of meditation is really to become a good Hindu. And it's the kind of program that is very scientific, and it has a lot of practical advantages to it, but this is how it's taught. But in essence, it's a technique that brings a person more into the occult, it brings a person more into these forces that are very difficult to deal with, and sometimes many people have had bad experiences from it.
I agree with him. You know, I had said before that I felt an initial surge of energy and vitality when I started TM, and it was a contrast of, you know, when you're out in a busy world, and you, even if you closed your eyes for 20 minutes twice a day, you'd feel better just from the rest. But as time started going on, I was getting spaced out. I was not progressing. I was just sort of standing still and vegetating. I didn't have the vitality and the energy and the life that I feel now.
Kathy, you've had some experiences in TM that you felt were not quite right. Could you tell me about them?
I was at MIU in Fairfield, Iowa, which is where we were living, getting my super, Maharishi International University, and I was getting my supernormal powers. And I was just with ladies. Maharishi always had it divided up, just ladies, just men, or couples. And when we would do our flying technique together, boy, I look back on it now, it's very strange. It would be like lots of sounds that would come out, yelling and screaming, and I just remember sometimes opening my eyes and sometimes being a part of it. You know, a bunch of girls, we'd be hopping around the room just screaming our brains out. Very bizarre. But see, the thing that's so strange is we thought it was normal, because it was explained to us that this was release of stress, and the release of stress is a positive thing because that's what leads you to enlightenment. So we accepted it just as a normal part of the program. People would speak in strange languages, intense emotions, people getting up, jumping up and down, yelling and screaming.
Now that you look back at it, what do you think was behind it?
It had to have been some other powers taking over. Because I remember during the flying, the reason that I would be propelled in the air was this force of energy that would go up my spine and through my head. It would literally pick me up and throw me. I had no control over it.
Do you think it was demonic?
Absolutely.
In bringing about a global transformation of consciousness, a change of beliefs, the transformation of our educational system is critical to New Age objectives. Programs of holistic and confluent education are being introduced into public school systems across the country. Techniques such as meditation, deep breathing, and visualization are being introduced as a part of the transformed curriculum. Dr. Beverly Galyan is consultant to several U.S. school systems.
Getting the kids acclimated to when they first come in the classroom in the morning, having beautiful Baroque music or quiet music playing, so that when they come in from the noise and the cacophony of the street, they come into a very quiet, focused setting. And starting with neck roll and acupressure techniques where you can massage quiet into your head. Just get a good sense and sharpen up your senses in your body. And doing some deep breathing. And then maybe holding hands with the kids in the class in a circle. This is for kids, adults of all ages. And while you're deep breathing, listening to the music, just letting the life energy in each person flow in a circular motion around the group and bring a balanced harmony to the key energy circulating around the group.
Some of these techniques that you're talking about, relaxing and breathing, are they really all that new?
They've been around for ages. They've been around for ages, but they have not been used in formal settings. And with the emphasis now on, you know, people are becoming smarter. We're no longer content to be sick, to be stupid, to be not knowing, to be controlled by forces outside of ourselves. And in our own innate desire to be in command of our own lives with our own internal wisdom, what's happening today is we're seeing a cataclysmic breakthrough in consciousness, that we're starting to seek out ways in which we can once again return to the gifts of our own nature, the harmony within ourselves. So deep breathing, taking in the life force, feeling the relaxation flowing through our bodies, beginning to become very acutely aware of our inner vibrations, our own visualization, our movement, our feelings. We're beginning to realize that as our sensory receptors become sharper, we are able to learn and take in much more information than we were in the past when we weren't using our own body systems.
Could you give us some specific examples of how these techniques are actually working with individual children?
Sure. Little kids who are language deficient, we call them ESL, English as a second language, or non-English limited English speaking. They're super to work with because these kids have very severe problems in both Spanish and English, or Vietnamese and English, whatever the language is, Korean and English. And so we do a lot of dance and movement and imagination activities with the kids. And in this one particular activity, one of my teachers taught her kids how to travel inside their body. And they would look inside their body and see what was there to see. Inside of me is, and then they'd open their eyes and they'd say, and outside of me is. So they could continually get a balance between going within their own being and be very sensitive to their own inner vibrations, as well as the outside. Now, we did this in conjunction with the regular language arts program. So, see, we're bringing these activities in confluently, which means all we're doing is teaching the old curriculum in a brand new way. So we can teach the kids these new mind skills, these new body skills, so that when they grow up, they can learn how to access these inner skills. And gradually, these new mind skills will become the curriculum of the future. Direct access to mental powers.
Do you see that happening?
Yes, it's happening already. Our kids are already tuned into it, and that's why you have the ET generation, the Star Wars generation. When you say, may the force be with you, kids have an intuitive sense that that means there's a higher power flowing through us. So let's get on and really work with it. So in this activity, the kids do this, and they close their eyes, and they create a picture of the love in their heart. Sometimes it's a fire, a flame, could be a symbol of a heart, red, whatever. And they take all the love out of their heart and they feel it in their hands and they make a love ball. And if you watch the little children doing this, they're totally focused on it. And then they pack all this love energy in their hands. And then we have them feel and tap each other's hands to feel the love energy coming off. And of course, we know from the energy flow in the human body, the energy does flow off the hands. So what we're really doing is saying, here is a better way to teach what you already need to teach. And while you're teaching the old, here are some new things you can also teach. So we really bridge the two worlds. And what the kids are doing is, the kids are responding extremely well to the activities because the kids are already there. We live in a visually literate society. We're living in a society where kids are very interested in things such as mysticism, psychic phenomena, out-of-mind, out-of-body experiences, because they're born with that kind of sense that this seems to be where energy flow is going.
There is the holistic education network that is all over the United States. It's based upon the belief that we are all divine, that children need to be educated spiritually. They need to get in touch with their higher self. Now, there may be some parents who would be in favor of this, but I think many parents would be concerned if they knew that people who were basically into witchcraft or shamanism were educating the spirits and souls and tinkering around with the minds of their children in public schools in the name of science and the latest educational techniques.
We decided to look more closely at the ways that New Age thinking is influencing our children outside of the classroom. With me is Don Hancock, co-producer on this project. And Don, I know this is an area of great concern for you, being the father of two young children.
Yes, it is, Dan, because one of the things that we've noticed is that it's starting at a very early age. The Saturday morning cartoons, the influence, E.T. and Star Wars have been mentioned several times already. They are making a sense that out-of-body experience, the mystical experience, is normal. It's the norm, not the exception. And so we found a lot of books, we found a television program, we found exercises for parents to do with children that all lead them into this same area.
That's right, Don. And Bev Galyan mentioned earlier that our children are growing up in a very visual society. And we discovered that there are television programs being produced which contain much of the New Age thinking in it. We have a clip of a program that was produced by the Olive Garvey Center for the Improvement of Human Functioning out of Wichita, Kansas.
Gosh, there's no one around today. Troubadour and Cool Cat went on a picnic.
And Carl and the wise woman went to play tennis. Anyway, everybody's gone. There's no one to have fun with.
Beth, I'm tired of you forgetting about me.
After all, I am your best friend.
I'm sorry. I didn't mean to hurt your feelings.
Oh, that's okay.
When there's no one around, though, make your own fun. You can do anything in your mind.
Another way that New Age thinking is influencing our children is in the area of children's books. We found many such books in the Chicago area. One is Meditating with Children, The Art of Concentration and Centering. Now, centering is a word which is used in our school systems many times to disguise meditation. This book is written for teachers and parents and encourages them to meditate with children in groups of seven so that they can learn to contact their inner guide. Don Hancock is with me. Don, what other books have you found?
This one I found especially intriguing. It's called The Kid's Whole Future Catalog. And it has a lot of very useful scientific information, such as information on the space shuttle, computers, what's going to happen in the future in electronics. However, also worked in is meditation, which you just spoke about, exploring inner space, and a type of astral projection, out-of-body experience. And it teaches them, which makes it the norm rather than the exception.
Mm-hmm. I have another book here, Don. It's called Meditation for Little People. And this book was written by Ann Langford, whom we interviewed at JFK University. Now, this book really teaches children that the most important thing to do is to love yourself and to talk to yourself through your inner angel. So it actually teaches children that they have an inner guide that they need to contact. Don?
Dan, this book is called Our Father. And what it is, it's a terrible distortion of the Lord's Prayer. It takes the Lord's Prayer phrase by phrase and goes through it and explains that... Basically the New Age concept, redefining the Lord's Prayer. And then at the end of it, it tells the children reading it, if you think often about God, you too will become a son man like Jesus after many lives on earth, like the great healer, like Krishna, like the Lord Buddha, and the other shining ones of many nations. So what it does, it takes the deity of Jesus Christ and makes him the same level as Buddha and tells children that they too can ascend to a higher point of living.
Don, I have a book by the same author, Joan Hodgson, called Hello, Son. Now, this book teaches children that they travel out of their body and that they do this many times when they're asleep. It also teaches them that they have an aura, and one of the famous men in history with a great aura was Jesus. And it says here, Dear Jesus is a wonderful sun man. His aura is so bright that it reaches everywhere like the sunshine. He always knows when people call to him for help. So really, it's a mixture of occultism with the gospel of Jesus Christ.
Dan, the last book I have is The Missing Magical Energy, and I found this particularly fascinating. It's not a teaching book, it's a story book, and it tells a story of the planet Earth that's polluted, people are unhappy, very similar to what they describe the society today. And what happens following that is that the beings from space see that Earth is in trouble. They get together on a planet around a crystal ball, they build a crystal energy tower, and send love beams to Earth. It comes in the form of rainbows, and everybody gets very happy in sending rainbows. And then suddenly, a new being appears to work in the skies with his little rainbow helpers, which, if you send a small fee, you can become a rainbow helper and get magical scrolls once a month. And this is for extremely young children, and it, again, sets this up as a norm. I think the biggest danger in this whole child influence thing is the fact that you and I, having grown up in a society, we have some basis upon which to judge this information. But if this is taught from a very early age, then they accept meditation, they accept astral projection, they accept the fact that one is coming in the clouds to save Earth at some point. And this really sets up the next generation for an Antichrist.
The New Age message is not being pushed exclusively among young children. We found it at all educational levels. Mary Maxwell is a former high school psychology teacher in the Chicago area. Is it more acceptable to study psychic phenomena in the classroom than 7 years ago when you first started teaching?
Sure. There hadn't been none of it, you know, in textbooks or hardly any of it, I'd say seven, eight years ago. But today, you know, you see it a lot more.
Are kids more open to it today than...
Yeah, I think there's a real fascination with it in psychic fairs. They have so many of those. And I don't think it's just the classroom, but, you know, they have psychic fairs all the time in these big shopping centers. So the kids have real fascination with that. And they see it on television. They see the famous astrologer in Chicago, and every newspaper's got astrology in it. Every magazine's got astrology readings in it. So it's there for them every day to see it.
The New Age movement is also making great strides at the college and university level. John F. Kennedy University in California offers advanced degrees in a wide range of holistic and occult studies. Dr. Hatha Sarunda is the dean of consciousness studies.
JFK University seems to be on the leading edge in this field of consciousness studies. Do you see other universities across the country following your lead?
What I see is that increasingly universities are including courses in their curriculum in transpersonal counseling, or in parapsychology, or in spiritual traditions relating to mysticism, or in holistic health. We increasingly find educational surveys happening through various associations related to the area of consciousness, and what we see in those association reports are an expanding base of programs that are doing that.
The New Age curriculum does not exclude adults. For example, this course by Lewis Tice is offered to employees by several Chicago businesses. Surprisingly enough, a civil service welder employed at Fort Leonard Wood, Missouri, was required by the U.S. government to take this identical course. Dr. Martin Bobgan explains another area where New Age thinking is gaining momentum.
I'm a dean at a community college in Santa Barbara, and I administer a vast program where at least one in four adults in our community college district takes at least one of our offerings. And we have a large faculty of over 400 instructors and a vast variety of subjects. And what I have seen in the last 20 years that I have been here is a greater and greater interest in the psychological arena, particularly a greater and greater interest in mind and the power that the mind has to accomplish certain things. We have a lot of classes that have to do with hypnosis, self-hypnosis, visual imagery, how someone can achieve power over even extreme diseases like cancer.
Although it's been demonstrated that the basic beliefs of the New Age movement stand in direct opposition to orthodox Judeo-Christian views of God and man, many are concerned that the New Age theology is successfully corrupting such orthodox beliefs. Sylvia Beadleston is a writer and researcher who has documented many of the New Age strategies. Has New Age thinking crept into the church?
Yes, it has. There has been some very, very strong evidence coming back that this is exactly what's happening. They have said very seriously that this is an area that they will have to go into to reform, more or less. You're seeing changes in ideals, changes in doctrine. You've got a different attitude coming through a lot of the churches now where there's compromise. There's now a swing to a new thought in religion as well. And they have said that in dealing with religions is something that they really can't go in opposition to or meet as an opposing force, but much rather they would actually go through the churches. They would go through and just bring around to this new thought.
Did you mention to me earlier that you first started hearing about the New Age in your church?
Yeah, only they never called it the New Age, and I think that's one of the things that kept me from really being born again, was because I learned about these things in my church. We could talk about world religions. We had hypnotists come to my church. I went to a mainline Christian church. And I kept feeling all along a greater need as I got older to get into the Bible. So I decided when I felt there was no faith development in my psychology courses when I was in graduate school, when I was in college, that I would go back and I would go to seminary, and that way I could bring the two of them together. And I was really into all this meditation, ESP, mind control, and they were very open to it. The seminary I went to was extremely open to it, and so I thought, I must be right. And I think that's one of the things we've got to really, as Christians, check on is, it, you know, is the Bible say it's true?
I remember I started going to a combination Bible study nutrition class led by the wife of a Christian chiropractor in our area. And we got into, she was one of the most loving people I think I have ever met. And she was warm, and she was the epitome of the healthy woman. She was vibrant. She looked like a goddess, like a Greek goddess. And we just got into all sorts of things. We got into the colors of fruits that you eat affecting your moods. We got into eating 3 pecans a day to ensure that you never get varicose veins. We're talking, we got into it. And that was the focus of our morning. I mean, we rushed through the Bible study to get to the nutrition part.
I'm very concerned by the fact that many of the New Age beliefs and practices are making their way into the church. Hypnosis, of course, through many Christian psychologists, visualization, positive mental attitude, and affirmations. It's centered within self. The church is getting into self just as much as the New Age movement.
In the spring of 1982, this advertisement appeared in 19 major newspapers across the world proclaiming the Christ is now here. On May 14th of that same year, at a major press conference here in Los Angeles, California, a Scotsman named Benjamin Crum made this very same statement and went on to predict that within a few months, all of humanity would know this.
Now, of all times, is the time for that expected event. And it is important to remember that all of the great religions await the coming of a teacher or an avatar. The Christians await the return of the Christ. At the same time, the Buddhists await the coming of another Buddha, the fifth Buddha, foretold by Gautama Buddha. And they call him Maitreya Buddha. And they expect him now at the dawn of the New Age. At the same time, the Muslims await the Imam Mahdi. Some of them believe he is already in the world. The Hindus await the return of Krishna, or the Bodhisattva, and the Jews, as always, await the coming of the Messiah. I speak out of the esoteric tradition, and esotericists know all of these under one name, the World Teacher, and await his return now at the dawn of the New Age.
Whatever happened to this startling prediction that the Christ would declare himself to a waiting world by the spring of 82? Who is Benjamin Crum, and where does he get his information? And what is the Tara Center, the group responsible for organizing Crum's international tours and media appearances and the ad campaigns? And why, 1 year later, are they still working hard to promote this message? We decided to come to Los Angeles and visit the Tara Center to find out.
From the point of light within the mind of God, let light stream forth into the minds of men. Let light descend on earth.
You are watching members of the Tara Center recite the Great Invocation. This is a prayer that is used in a form of group meditation called transmission. During transmission, spiritual energies are delivered into the group by the spiritual hierarchy.
May Christ return to earth. From the center, where the will of God is known, let purpose guide the little wills of men. The purpose which the masters know and serve. From the center, which we call the race of men, let the plan of love and light work out, and may it seal the door where evil dwells. Let light and love and power restore the plan on earth.
Why is the Great Invocation so important?
This is a world prayer that was given out by the Christ in the form that we use right now in 1945. And the invocation is like we speak of a mantra. It is, there is power in these words. And by saying these particular combinations of words, we are able to call forth these energies. It's like a special way of addressing hierarchy and saying, please send through the energy now. We are prepared to deal with it and to work with it.
This Christ, is this whom the Christians would call Jesus Christ of the Bible?
Jesus is the person who last, at the beginning of the last age, they call, brought forth a message of love. He brought forth the teaching that said, love your neighbor as yourself. The Christ is the name of the person who is actually an office in the spiritual hierarchy.
Okay.
And the Christ worked through this person, Jesus, 2,000 years ago and brought forth that teaching. These are terms that are coming from a set of teachings called the Ageless Wisdom Teachings.
What is the spiritual hierarchy that Tracy just talked about?
There is a group of advanced beings who are formerly people who have passed through the evolutionary cycle on this planet and who stand behind human evolution and the evolutions of the other kingdoms of nature and help us out. They're mostly unknown to us people, but periodically, as she says, one of them comes forward with a teaching for the age. And this spiritual hierarchy is led by the one we know as the Christ. And the various religions of the world have their own name for him. He's known to the Buddhists as the Maitreya Buddha, to the Muslims as the Imam Mahdi, and so forth. Each major religion has a name for this being. We know him as the Christ. He worked through the Master Jesus, who is one of the members of the spiritual hierarchy during the last time, 2,000 years ago. This time we understand that he has come in his own right to the world and is currently living in an apparently physical, normal body like you or I have, as an apparently normal, regular person.
What is the basis for all of this information? I've never heard this before.
The teachings were brought forth from Tibet through Alice Bailey and Blavatsky by a member of the hierarchy whose name is D.K. Jwalkul. And Jwalkul brought forth a portion of the Ageless Wisdom, which Ageless Wisdom means that this knowledge has been given out as humanity is ready from time to time. And now we are mentally prepared for this stupendous event. So DK has brought forth a bit of the teaching for our consideration.
Are you people a little bit embarrassed because last spring you put out an ad worldwide that Christ is now here? This Benjamin Krem said he was going to be here within a few months. He never showed up. What happened?
Well, it's not that he never showed up. As far as we're concerned, he is where he is, and he has been since 1977. What happened was...
But didn't Krem say that we would all know about him within months?
Right, because according to Krem and the messages and the information that he received from his own personal master, with whom he is in constant rapport mentally, this person is speaking along such powerful lines and is saying things that are so important that it was assumed that people would get interested and want to know who this guy was, would bring him forth into the public eye, and that it was up to the media. This is the whole thing that it hinges on. It's up to the media, as representatives of humanity, to seek him forth, because it's a news story. Here's somebody who's talking about things that are very important, and bring him to the public eye, because it's a law in the spiritual hierarchy that never at any time can humanity's free will be infringed upon. So the Christ can't just come out and say, here I am, this is what you have to do, or else. Benjamin Krem can't say, here he is, this is what's happening, and take it from here. In the Bible it says no one will point to the country, no one will point to the time and say, lo, he is here, lo, he is there. No one can look right at this person and say, this is him. And because that's infringing human free will. So it was up to the media to bring this message forth. The media didn't respond.
Are there a lot of people that believe the way you do, or are you a little group here?
No, we are not isolated at all. If you read the newspapers closely, you will begin to see that there are people like Buckminster Fuller and Barbara Marx Hubbard, if you're familiar with their names, that are saying that we are about to experience a planetary Pentecost, and they are referring to a single day.
Okay, that's two people.
That's
are there a lot
people.
Of groups? Are there a lot
There's
of people saying...
There's a lot
saying...
of groups in the new, what we call New Age groups, that feel that we are on the verge of a, somebody else calls it a quantum leap in consciousness. There are many people, we get letters all the time from these people that that are feeling the same thing. They are having visions. They are experiencing dreams. They are having expansions of consciousness, all sorts of things that make what we are saying a fact for them.
The Motor City continues its battle with high unemployment due to a struggling American automobile industry. Yet the New Age movement continues to flourish in this city. A Detroit attorney named Constance Cumby began to notice this in 1980 when she began a massive research campaign.
I'd go in there and I read practically everything in the store on prophecy and biblical commentary. And then I started noticing a different line of books that ran in their bookstores, and I noticed there were books from writers of many denominations. And the books didn't particularly sound like their own denomination, but they all sounded exactly like each other. There were books that called for the creation of a new world order, world food authority, world water authority, a new world information order. They would make frequent reference to the Club of Rome reports and a Global 2000 report, which was just coming out about the time I was heavily into this study. And the books looked very much like things I had seen in the old political world that I was no longer particularly active in. And it looked like what we would call a political platform. So I started thinking, isn't that interesting? Wouldn't that be convenient for the Antichrist? And I felt ashamed of myself as soon as I thought it. I said, well, these are Christian books by Christian writers. But my attention was riveted to those books, and I kept going back and looking, and I noticed the vocabulary was rather unique. Now, if there's one thing I've always prided myself on, it was my vocabulary. These books, things were done holistically. We didn't live on Earth. We lived on spaceship Earth in a global village on a very crowded planet. We all had to undergo this strange new transformation because we were entering a new paradigm. We had to have a new vision. Our old ways wouldn't do. We were, now that we were going into this new crowded planet, some of the books were saying that we had to, that there were truths in other religions as well that we should take a look at, that all the world's religions had the same central truth. And they were talking about courage for dialogue, and it looked to me like the dialogue was leaning heavily, tilting heavily in favor of Eastern mysticism more than the Eastern religions adopting portions of Christianity. But I noticed that the books of the strange new theology had the very same vocabulary as the books with the very heavy political platform, and the books of the strange new theology would make references to the political aspects. I didn't start putting it all together until I picked up a copy of The Aquarian Conspiracy by Marilyn Ferguson. And she said that they communicated in the movement with code words and signals. She said the movement was large. She called it a great shuddering conspiracy ready to overtake us. Page 37 of her book, she said in many different places at many different times, the kindling had been carefully laid for the real conflagration, the one that would forever alter the landscape. She said they had broken with certain key Western values, and whenever I hear that, I wonder which ones. And so I turned to her chapter entitled Spiritual Adventure Connection with the Source. And sure enough, she said, we turn east for completion. Eastern mysticism, direct experiential religion was the order of the day. And I had noticed that trend through all the books I had looked through. She quoted from the Aquarian Gospel, and I picked up a copy of the Aquarian Gospel. And page 14 denied Jesus was the Christ. Page 16 said one may enter fully into the spirit of the God of force, and that rang a bell with another Bible verse I'd learned. He shall honor in his estate the God of force is a God whom his fathers knew not, Daniel 11:38. That's the King James Version I was quoting from. And then chapter 14 of the Aquarian Gospel prophesied that one day a mighty master soul would come to earth, a light greater than Jesus, to light the way to the throne of perfect man. So I figured that was a direct satanic prophecy of the Antichrist. And finally, I picked up a book by Benjamin Krem. I found it in July of 1981. It was entitled The Reappearance of the Christ and the Masters of Wisdom. And it said, since July 19th, 1977, the Christ has been among us. Well, I had so many insane books from the New Age movement saying this kind of thing, I kind of disregarded that one. Put it aside until I was computer cataloging the collection in September. And I picked it up again and skimmed it. And the back had a section on how the plan is working out. Well, I had suspected that there was a plan, but I didn't expect to find an admission in writing that there was a plan. That was more than I ever dared hope for. And sure enough, he cited a lot of the components, things that I had seen in the Christian bookstores, even as evidence of the fact that the plan was working out. He talked about this move towards centralization of our food supplies and change of our economic system and of a new world economic order. And he said that they had hoped that the Christ would make his declaration by mid-1982 at the latest. And at that point, I skimmed through Benjamin Krem's bibliography in the back, and he had said he was an Alice Bailey disciple. I'd never paid that any attention either. And I thought maybe his bibliography was worth perusal. And he quoted from Alice Bailey at length and said he was her disciple. And in the back, he said to read The Externalization of the Hierarchy. And he was right on target. That was the book to read. It was all laid out very coldly. Repeated references to the plan. This book was written many years ago, between 1919 and 1949.
This is the international headquarters for the ancient mystical order of the Rosicrucians, located in San Jose, California. The park here is filled with many ancient Egyptian, Babylonian, and Assyrian symbols. It was here that a young woman named Sylvia Beadleston began to recognize many of today's popular symbols as being occultic in nature.
I had been out to our local area here, the Rosicrucian Park Museum, which they deal with a lot of Egyptian and Babylonian structures. And I was really quite interested in the symbolism involved in it, and had been researching through the library different symbols, meanings from Babylon, and found out that much of the symbols were the same. And they were coming up more and more and on different logos, letterheads. It was fascinating. They were just coming out. So we noticed the connection between the literature, the symbols, the books, and still not really convinced, we decided to just see if anything really would come from it. A few months later, I was listening to the radio. I had dialed in the radio and happened to pick up a station from San Francisco, and they were broadcasting New Age Theory and New Age Broadcasting Network. And what they were saying is a lot of what they were presenting on the show was based on, again, the writings of Alice A. Bailey. And they incorporated it with the use of the Great Invocation, which they said would be a world prayer for all humanity. So I went back and looked at the booklets, and of course here was the Great Invocation, and I noticed that it was appearing on several pieces of literature, and booklets on world structure, the new religion, all of this was incorporated in these booklets. And I noticed that the booklets were published by a group called Lucis Trust and Lucis Press in New York, and also a group called World Goodwill. And in the booklet, they say that this belief or this structure to this Christ is based on the writings of Alice A. Bailey. And that's basically where my first exposure came to it. So it did seem to build. There was more groups out there using the symbols, more groups out there using the Great Invocation, and again, the writings on Alice A. Bailey.
How did you become more informed on the subject? Did you start to see these philosophies creeping up everywhere?
Well, one thing that kept coming up time and time again was the Great Invocation, and it was being used by many, many groups, some not even promoting the New Age theme, but again promoting this prayer. Well, from researching several books on Alice A. Bailey, which she has over 24 books in her, alone that she's written, it was actually written out in three stanzas, and what they are presenting is only the third stanza, but there's two stanzas before that that talk about actually evoking the hidden one, one that would come forth. So that just really made me wonder more and more why the importance of this. Now, the symbols kept appearing on different logos, again, from different groups, different thoughts, encounter groups, and that began to really get me concerned about it. The Great Invocation itself was used just recently as far as coming out with just like what you could call your average groups. The Reader's Digest had it featured as a full-page ad in their October issue this last year. And just recently, KCBS here in San Francisco used it as their Christmas message. So, again, this is what was I was seeing when I finally was brought some tapes from a dear Christian friend from another church. And she says, Sylvia, you've got to listen to these tapes. It's fantastic. She says, there's another woman out there, a lawyer from Detroit, and she's doing exactly the same thing you're doing. She says, it's amazing. So sure enough, I took him home and I listened to him. And she had basically dealt with some of the political groups and some of the organizations, whereas I was working at it from symbols, from cults, from religions, and Bailey. But we were all hitting along the same lines, only coming out a little bit different. The fact that we lined it up from different aspects, it makes it fascinating alone.
And I started reading the Alice Bailey book that Benjamin Krim said to read for more information, and he was right on target. That was the book to read. It was all laid out very coldly. Repeated references to the plan. This book was written many years ago, between 1919 and 1949. What I read in the book was anti-Semitic all the way through to its esoteric core. It was anti-Christian all the way through to its esoteric core. That new world order that I had heard tossed around so freely in Christian books was laid out in those books with great specificity. The plans for the establishment of the United Nations were laid out in great specificity. I've learned since that the second in command man at the United Nations, Robert Mueller, is an open disciple of both Benjamin Krim and of Alice Bailey and Lucis Trust.
One of the biggest on the religious influence would be David Spangler, for example. He seems to be a very main headlining person as far as promoting a new spirituality for the new age. In government, you're going to find people. The one I've encountered most often has been Donald Keyes of the United Nations. Of course, with Mueller, who goes also with the United Nations. And they have written books on the subject where they talk about a one-world unity, a one-world government, which is going to formulate into a one-world court.
Many critics of the New Age are concerned that the idea of a one-world government is rapidly becoming more than an idea. They see individuals such as the Assistant Secretary General of the United Nations, Robert Mueller, and Donald Keyes as spearheading such an objective.
This is contributing.
Mr. Keyes is a longtime consultant to UN delegations and committees and a foremost lecturer on the emerging global society. He is the president and co-founder of Planetary Citizens and the author of Earth at Omega.
Is there thinking underway concerning the possibilities of a one-world government?
What we find happening is, for instance, in the UN structure, we're spinning off what I would call departments of planetary management. They're rather semi-autonomous, each one directed to a different area, and something more organic is taking place. My own view is that it's hard to say what is coming because it's not going to be like anything we've had before. It's going to emerge as something totally new and more appropriate to managing a planet than anything we might have foreseen.
What is this that's coming, and is it similar to the transformation that Marilyn Ferguson refers to in the Aquarian Conspiracy?
Well, this is an important aspect of it, in the fact that there are now a large number of people who have seen the world and themselves and their personal lives in a new way. And this is contributing a very positive element to redirecting planetary affairs.
Donald Keyes organized the Planetary Congress for the World We Choose, which convened for the first time on June 17, 1983 in Toronto. Michael Linfield from the Findhorn community in Scotland was there.
Were there any concrete decisions made at the World Congress?
What happened with the 475 people that came together? As I said, we broke into the 30 working groups, and we went through a consensus process to find out, first of all, what our vision was for a future world, because we have to agree that we want a common vision. And then we had to look at the present structure and why that had been created, what values had created that. Then we had to transfer that vision into the qualities that were needed to bring it about. And that this means, like, policy changes, local action. And what happened was, for instance, this first draft report is a statement from the 475 people obtained from a consensus process. And in it, it lists everything, you know, the global vision, the action steps to implement the approaches, economics, international, national alternative concerns, human rights, nuclear issues, the peace campaigns. All of this is just a way of saying, this is what we need.
We obtained a copy of the report and found many of the approaches to be spiritual in nature. Some of the things it calls for are the acceptance of personal and group meditation as a social norm, the use of spiritual guidance in determining direction, spiritual support groups, consistent visualization, the introduction of meditation into school systems, the acceptance of human potential as being unlimited, the creation of a new international economic order, and the creation of a world peacekeeping force.
Is the transformation of society happening today? Are the grassroots people getting behind it? Are key government officials getting behind it? Is it going to happen?
We're early in the process. We're building new constituencies. People are moving into places of responsibility where change is needed. There are some especially fine people in various places who have a vision of a better future and are busy trying to implement it. But I'd say we're still at an early stage. I'm hopeful because the beginnings we've seen are very impressive and have the values that are necessary for our global society. I think there are people in politics and people in government and people in the UN, people in health and education who have glimpsed a newer vision and are busy trying to develop new ways of doing things, reforms within those institutions.
What's wrong with a one-world court system, a one-world government, for that matter?
Okay. Again, it sounds good. It's a good idea, and one that a lot of people are very anxious to see come about. They view it as a solution to the conflict that we have in the world right now. If we can all get based on the same laws, rules, beliefs, even, there wouldn't be the conflict and the wars and the problems that we have now. So a lot of people in very earnest are working to promote this idea, this platform, bring it into being. But again, you have to put the logical thinking alongside of that also. If you're going to put our world structure under one roof, so to speak, if we're going to have a world court or a world government, then obviously there has to be a head to that world court and a world government. And my question is, and should remain in a lot of people's minds, who's going to head up that one world court, that one world system?
Who will head the one world government? When we come back, we'll explore some answers.
Do you think a world leader is coming?
Absolutely.
As we discuss the possibilities of a one world leader with New Agers, their answers range from the God or force within empowering us to rule as one, to an avatar, a higher God among us, who will merely teach and guide mankind. The late Buckminster Fuller was a featured speaker at this year's Mind, Body, Spirit Festival in San Francisco. In a rare private interview, he shared with us his vision regarding the future world government.
We're probably coming into a world integration. We'll be coming to a democracy probably for the first time in history where we discovered every human being has an electromagnetic field. Very delicate, very difficult to sense, but there it is. And when you're feeling negative, it's negative. When you're feeling positive, it's feeling positive. So we'll be able to get a round-the-world satellite pickup of all the dispositions of humanity regarding any question. We may really have great electronic democracy really working for this the first time in history.
My final question, do you see this great democracy being a one-world government?
Completely one-world, indeed.
Who would be at the head of it?
One world or nobody.
Who would run that government?
Nobody. Okay. The people run it because you run it from electronically. What do the people want? You can put up proposals, we do this or that, and you find whether people are against it or not.
Do you think a world leader is coming?
Absolutely.
If there's but a world leader, will he lead a one world government?
It is a world leader of a different sense. when we talk about the unification of the world, this is not a dictatorship of an imposed central authority that says, thou shalt do it this way or else. What Maitreya will do is he will point the way. He will say, these are the problems that you face, and here are the solutions. All you have to do are follow these things, and the world will straighten itself out. It is up to us to accept or to reject this. It is our free will. We will not be infringed in that way where someone will dictate to us what we must do. But there
will he be at the head of the world, this man?
We will want him. A person, let me ask you this, Dan. We're all intelligent people here. If somebody could come up and give you clear answers to the problems that we face on this planet right now, who would you want running things? Who would anyone want running things? I think we all recognize that the political leaders right now do not necessarily have the answers.
Is there the ultimate one coming?
If the ultimate one has come or is with us, it'll come in such a package that we won't even think in those terms. That is, if you are the Maitreya, if you are the real thing, and you came by in the room and I recognized you as the Maitreya, we would just be in love with each other. And I wouldn't be going, you're the ultimate. And you wouldn't ask for that kind of acknowledgement if you were the Maitreya. It is only small human minds and organizations who are afraid that things may be lost that kind of keep grasping that it has to be in a certain way. We are the ultimate. This is the pinnacle of human civilization right now.
Sylvia Beadleston's research, just prior to meeting Constance Cumby, led her to recognize similarities between New Age beliefs and symbols and the Third Reich.
What fascinated me about it and the Nazi connection was the symbols again, because if you look at a lot of what Hitler used in his Reich, you'll see a lot of the same Eastern Babylonian symbols that I originally started researching with. So that's another way we're really bringing it out.
Constance Cumby points to a book by Jean-Michel Angebert, The Occult and the Third Reich, as significant in opening her eyes to the connection.
I was startled that when I read Angebert's book, it's a joint signature of two French scholars, I could have whited out every last thing in the book that said the Nazis, the Third Reich. I could have written in the New Age movement, and if I'd really lacked scruples, I could have released it as an up-to-date text on the New Age movement. It was identical.
In what way?
Well, they had the same cosmology. They had the same belief system. They both believed in masters at Shambhala. They both believed in the development of an Aryan super race. They both talked about the need for ending the Jewish problem, for a final solution to the Jewish problem. There were many other points of identity.
Which New Age texts speak of doing away with the Jews?
The externalization of the hierarchy by Alice Ann Bailey says that the Jewish problem is the world's leading racial problem, and the world will not know peace until that problem has been correctly solved. She said the three goals of the New Age Christ were to, first of all, restructure Christianity, to abolish Orthodox Judaism, and to give us new revelation. Yet another book that was recommended by Benjamin Krim, The Rays and the Initiations, said the new Christ would not be Jewish. They didn't know what nationality he would be, but for sure he would not be Jewish. That the Jews had forever forfeited that privilege, and that they would be given their own national Messiah, but it would not be the world Messiah. And that the Jews needed to pass through fires of purification in order to learn humility. Well, this passage indicated it was written in 1949. And the whole world knew what had happened to Europe's Jewish population in World War II in 1949. In 1949, there was just no secret as to what had happened. So I was horrified, to put it mildly. I had many Jewish friends. The same books also talked about Aryanism. So at that point, the identity with Nazism had hit me head on.
I think it's very well documented that it was a revival of occultism, of Eastern mysticism, in Nazi Germany or pre-Nazi Germany that prepared the way for Hitler. I believe in the same way the New Age movement is preparing us for a much larger figure than Hitler, in my opinion, the Antichrist.
Well, the New Age is coming, and the word that the New Age thinkers are using is the word having to do with a New Age, a turning point, a change in society, and the New Age that's coming is really the coming of Christ himself. And anybody that describes a New Age without Jesus is giving us another gospel, and it's a false gospel that has a false Messiah. And we know that false Messiah, Antichrist, is going to come.
I had started it so that I could gain more understanding and love, and so I could know God. I'd wanted to do that since I was a child, and I thought TM's a great way to do it. But I actually found more loneliness, and I found less caring. I found that Maharishi really, in essence, didn't care about the people who were involved. He was just interested in this world movement to promote the enlightenment of mankind. He was not interested in people. But in becoming a Christian and seeing that contrast now, that there is a creator, that there is an owner of this universe, someone who loves me, you know, that love of God is there. It's such a difference, such a difference.
I think that I'm a changed person. I know that I am. I'm happier. But I still get sad. I still have things that hurt me. I don't have instant success in everything. I still have failures, but when I have a failure, I have a place to go. I am lifted up. In my life, whenever I have listened to the Lord, through the Word and through prayer, there's never been a deception. There's never been a lie, and He's always told me the truth. None of them had the truth. None of them could really look into me. And, you know, what a comfort. God knows everything before I do it. He's there to heal me. He never lies. And just to know that, and to know that I have eternal life, is greater than anything the New Age may tell.
It was only then that I realized that all the many, many mystical experiences I was having, psychedelic experiences without drugs, all the visions that I had of seeing the gods and so on, were all part and parcel of the darkness that was in me. God set me free from all of that, and Christ, who said, I am the light of the world, entered my life and made me a brand new person. God gave me a much more fantastic hope, a hope to be with Him in His kingdom forever and ever. And I found the answer through Jesus Christ. Today I know who I am, I know why I am alive, I know where I came from, and I know where I am going.
Since the completion of this documentary, New Age philosophy has emerged from its esoteric cocoon to permeate every area of American life. New Age occultism is being presented as the long-awaited cure for society's most pressing problems. In the field of medicine, holistic health claims to be the ultimate home remedy for life-threatening diseases such as cancer and AIDS. Educators are searching for new sources of knowledge that go far beyond reading, writing, and arithmetic. In fact, one of the featured speakers at the 1988 American Society of Curriculum Development was none other than Marilyn Ferguson, author of The Aquarian Conspiracy. Perhaps the most fertile soil for New Age beliefs is found in the entertainment field. Spielberg, Lucas, and others continue to use magic and mysticism to draw millions to the box office each week. Obviously, the most publicized New Age disciple is Shirley MacLaine. Her best-selling book, Out on a Limb, was followed by a made-for-TV movie which pulled exceptionally high ratings. However, the most disturbing fact is that New Age practices, such as visualization and inner healing, are being promoted and encouraged from an increasing number of pulpits across America. During a recent trip to Moscow, I was amazed to discover the widespread practice of channeling, inner healing, and parapsychology. Obviously, America is not alone in her love of New Age spirituality. Practically every country on the face of the earth is falling to the seductive promises of New Age godhood. Recent scandals among national church leaders have resulted in further public distrust of those who proclaim the message of Christ. Tragically, the end result of all of this is that millions of people are changing direction in their search for the pathway to paradise. Paul's words to Timothy contain some timely advice. He says, "Have nothing to do with godless myths. Rather, train yourselves to be godly." In this age of godless myths, our only barometer for truth is the Word of God.